All right, I'm going to get started, everyone. It's 4 o'clock, and so just in the interest of keeping everyone on schedule, I see that we already have a bunch of people who have signed up and signed in, so we should be ready to get going. My name is Shiloh Taberge, and I am the Vice President of Membership for the NCWBA. Thank you so much for joining us today for our membership teleconference on mentoring millennials. Today we're going to be hearing from Maddie Martin, and Maddie is the head of growth and education for Smith AI. Smith AI provides law firm communication services, including their virtual receptionist and intake service, web chat, and keypad cloud phone system. She spent the last decade growing tech startups from New York to California, and has expertise in digital marketing, small business communications, lead conversion, email marketing, SEO and content marketing, social media, co-marketing, and event marketing. Maddie can be reached at maddie@smith.ai. Just a few quick housekeeping items before we start. You should be muted right now, and so if you're not, please mute your line unless you wanted to speak so that we can keep the background noise from interfering. There are also slides that Maddie has prepared for today that might be helpful for you. If you wanted to take a look at those are on our website at ncwba.org, teleconferences. So if you go there, you should be able to follow along with those slides a little bit. And Maddie, thanks so much for joining us, and feel free to take it away.
Thank you so much, and thanks for having me, you guys. I'm really excited to talk with this group, and you know, I was reviewing all of your really helpful comments and questions in the survey that was provided before this call, and I was just saying before we got started that there were so many great questions and comments that were provided that I may veer quite a bit from the deck that I prepared. And the nice thing is that that's just a resource for us for any time. So you have my contact information on the last slide of that deck. And I will just say, like, please don't hesitate to reach out to me because I only have a half an hour with you guys right now. And I want to be very thoughtful about the, you know, addressing the questions that I saw repeated commonly within that survey that was sent out. And I just want to be really thoughtful about the specific needs of this group. So even though the topic is mentoring millennial women, and we can talk a lot about the gender gaps and how mentoring can help address that, I will sort of go through some of my slides, but I'm also going to address some of the most repeated themes that I saw in those answers so that I make sure that I hit on those and it's, you know, particularly useful to this group. And one thing that I will say first off is that I have worked in startups now for the last 10 years, and you can imagine there are a lot of millennials who I've worked with in that respect. So many of the pain points that some of you brought up, I have experienced personally myself. So if my experience can help you, I will be thrilled, but please don't hesitate to follow up with me later. So I'm looking at slide 4 right now about the learning goals. So, you know, I wanted to talk a little bit about the state of women in the workplace, and just one housekeeping note, if you're not yet on mute, please do mute yourself. My brain just kind of steers itself towards noise. So, If you could please, that would be really helpful for me to just make sure I'm thinking clearly. But so the learning goals, you know, the state of women in the workplace in the legal industry, I'm not going to tell you anything that you don't know really in terms of that topic. But then what are the influential factors for millennial women at work and in legal specifically? Considerations for mentors, where and how to engage with millennial women, and the importance of face-to-face, which some of you did raise in your commentary, the mentoring approaches that are best suited to millennial women. And then, you know, a lot of the questions were also around managing millennial women, so not necessarily mentoring, but so I'll touch on that as well. And then how to develop sort of more formalized mentoring programs so that it can live beyond just you one-on-one with your mentor and mentee, And then also things that are working, hopefully they can be shared and replicated across, you know, the NCWBA and other organizations that are part of that can benefit from your learnings here. So who cares? Well, we know already that, you know, a lot of data suggests that men tend to seek out more proactively mentors, whereas women are typically not as proactive. They're much more passive, maybe amenable to mentorship, but not seeking it out as often. So there is a stronger role here to be played for mentors of women in general, and then millennial women specifically in terms of building out the newest generation and the largest generation actually in the workforce today. So in law firms specifically, we see that, you know, the associates and the people coming out of law school, you know, about 50% of them are actually women. But then when we look at the top tiers of the law firms, the equity partners and the senior leadership, you know, they're a lot less likely to be represented as equally there, especially women of color. And, you know, I think that one really important point is that, you know, even across organizations, so there's hiring from within and then external hires, so three times more likely is the likelihood of men coming in as hire more so than women. And the exhibit on slide 7 just demonstrates the disparity between, you know, white men and then women of color with men of color and white women in between, showing the sort of funnel down into the senior leadership levels of a law firm. And this isn't necessarily unique to law firms, but we do find that it is an industry that is extremely concentrated in its in having the men still at the very top of the organization. And in fact, actually, associations and nonprofits are sometimes those least affected among industries and workplaces that have female leaders. So the beautiful thing that we have here is that we have a lot of female leaders who are on this call and seeking to be better leaders of women. But one opportunity that I will mention very early on is that there are ways that, you know, to leverage men who are in leadership positions to become mentors of millennial women as well. So that role doesn't just fall to, you know, women as mentors of millennial women, but how can we leverage, much in the same way that men are coming to speak out for, you know, better balance for women in the workplace and in other ways, and fathers are speaking up for mothers' rights, how do we leverage those men who are in those positions of senior leadership to become mentors themselves and to have it be a joint approach through both genders? So as we kind of look at the definition of a millennial woman, and again, if folks can mute their lines, that would be really helpful just so everyone can hear. These are people who were born, you know, between 81 and 96, so, you know, early to mid-20s to approaching 40 right now. And if we consider the fact that the average law school entrant is 24 and they're graduating at 27, then what we're getting is within this millennial range, people who are in their late 20s to late 30s. And what we know about millennials is that they're waiting longer to have children. They're shifting away from marriage and traditional sort of social infrastructure and shifting more towards education and career attainment. The challenge is that, and I will start to kind of dive in now some of the, you know, commentary that I saw before this call, is that there is a lot of sort of outsized and misaligned expectations about career development and how quickly it can happen. There is absolutely within the millennial generation the immediate gratification demands that even for me, being one of the, I guess, older millennials, feels like I'm not even within the same generation, because I always was taught that, you know, you put your head down and you work and you learn from those ahead of you. What many people commented on in the initial survey was that, you know, not only is there demonstrated and common lack of commitment, but also coupling that with a lack of respect, a lack of etiquette, a lack of vulnerability and sort of like apology when necessary to mistakes that were made, and almost a cavalier attitude in some ways. And I will say that I have noticed this, and one thing, well, two things that I would say that can address some of these concerns. One is, in terms of commitment, I find that the best approach that I've seen good results through is setting very clear expectations. And this obviously works with, you know, many different types of employees or mentees or people who are on, you know, boards and councils with, even clients, but it's very important to set clear expectations. And I think for this generation, in particular, there is a sense of deservedness that you can get around by saying, you know, this is where we are currently. If you're mentoring someone who is on your staff or who has responsibilities that you're overseeing in whatever regard, maybe it's not a job, but it's a role of some kind, to set expectations and to say, there are the following goals that are for the organization that we serve, that are for you personally, that are for our department, and this is how you can contribute towards those, and this is how we will measure success. And here are the expectations for your contributions to these end goals and objectives. And I find that not only saying so, but holding yourself accountable and being a good role model in coming back to those goals over time and saying, you know, what I originally laid out, I am going to stick to, and consistently coming back to those expectations. And if there's veering off from them, you know, pulling that back in and saying, we agreed to this, or I laid this out in the beginning, that can be very helpful in not only having you be on the same page as a millennial you're mentoring, but also to actually have them commit to staying around longer. Because I think one of the main concerns that I've seen is that we invest all this time and energy in the millennials, and then they leave us and they take all that knowledge and they bring it somewhere else where they're only going to stay for a short time as well. So, you know, maybe a year or less. So how do you maintain that motivation? I think for each individual, there's a certain amount of responsibility they may have the capacity and interest in taking on, but setting those expectations and having them be very transparent, not just to the two of you, but also all the way up to the top tiers of the organization, can be very helpful in terms of setting a long-term path for growth and contribution and drawing that very clear connection line between how their work is meaningful to the department and the organization as a whole. Now, as for corrective action, if that's necessary, you know, I find that the feedback delivery mechanism that has worked best for me, and when I speak to others, it's been effective for them as well, is, you know, the Oreo approach, which is you give good feedback, and then you give the negative or constructive feedback, and then you give good as the final conclusion. And, you know, hopefully you're able to do so. It may feel like the positives are minor if there's something really weighty to be constructively sharing, but that can open up the receptiveness early on. It can remove a bad taste in the mouth after the conversation is, you know, about the criticism is given. But it can also make sure that the person is receptive by the time that you're giving that criticism, and there's sort of a warm up to the conversation where they have an open mind because you've been praising them, and that's something that they, you know, have perked their ears up to, and the ears are open when that criticism comes in. Now, I will say that one person mentioned, you know, microaggressions and feeling very frustrated and feeling, you know, like you're going to explode, you know, when all these little frustrations come home to roost, so to speak. And I have been there. And I will say sometimes it's about changing our own expectations, or sometimes it's just about not projecting our expectations of ourselves onto others. But when I am someone who, for example, is very, you know, readily able to apologize if I feel like or I see that I've made a mistake on something, if someone who I'm managing, and often this is a millennial trait that I have seen increasingly in that generation, that there is a reluctance to apologize and take ownership over issues. And the example that I'll give for that is that I was managing someone and I noticed errors. For example, they were building an event schedule and had written, you know, midnight as the start time instead of noon, and the wrong date here, and many typos there. And, I share the correction. And then what happens? But, oh, good catch, Maddie. Well, I mean, what you really meant to say in my mind is sorry. But the expectation is actually from my own feeling of how I would have responded. And if the corrective action is taken and that behavior is not repeated, then maybe that is the thing to focus on rather than the response that we may be more used to. So that's one thing that I might mention is, you know, sometimes when you feel the frustration, it may be because you are used to one way of being responded to, but that may not be the current situation with the person that you're managing or mentoring. So I wanted to make sure that I address those two topics specifically. Now, coming back to, you know, some of these dilemmas with millennial women, there is an advancement gap, and now I'm on slide 9, and women are absolutely less likely to seek out mentors than men on the whole. But at the same time, like when we talk about the investment and the energy and the time that it takes to be a mentor, you know, the nice thing is that the opportunity here is that there's more career time before the marriage or the first child birth than ever, actually, with these people who are coming out of college and law school. So there is actually increasingly a large amount of time for dedicated focus where the mentoring will hopefully have a greater and more lasting impact, building in good habits early on in their 20s so that they can carry them through and also hopefully become mentors themselves. So given the sheer number of millennials, there's an opportunity for a large impact in that respect as well. And given the social reach of many millennials, I think there is an opportunity for increased impact there in that respect too. And what we see is that there are two main, now I'm on slide 12, I think that there are two main ways to see mentorship and sponsorship, which is a word that is not often shared as much as mentorship, but I think when we say mentor, we mean sometimes many different things. And we saw that in the responses to the survey. So what we saw is that some people were talking about managing millennials, others were talking about mentoring, and still others were talking about sponsoring. So what are the terms and definitions here? So a mentor is not necessarily someone who has control over the advancement of the millennial, in this case, the millennial woman, but it is someone who is providing guidance, looking out for the best interest. And in fact, it may not even be molding someone for future leadership, but maybe just to be a standout individual contributor to help balance their work and life. As many of you mentioned, you know, how do you set really good habits early on? Well, being a good role model, but also doing life sort of with that person and saying, we're going to check in not only about work progress, but also how you're sleeping and your stress levels and what other things you're doing for yourself personally. Now, when we talk about sponsoring, that is more of a role where you have control over the career trajectory of that person. So you may be a manager, you may be the leader of an organization where you can actually help open up spots as in jobs for the people who you mentor. And that's more of a sponsor role. That's more of a placement where you're able to coax this person in and make decisions to put them into roles that are advancing their career, and that may be in leadership roles or in just roles that are better and better suited to them. Now, slide 13 talks about the mentorship life cycle, and you know, this is sort of, it's fluid. This is meant to be mostly just examples of how mentorship flows from the first meeting and source and interaction to it becoming a cycle, really, where it is generating more mentors and mentees. And you find that, you know, the bar associations and specialty associations that are adjacent to them, law schools, whether it's current students even, I mean, how early can you start, or alumni groups of graduates, and then also groups within social media. So, you know, thinking about groups like Lawyerist or Maximum Lawyer or, you know, even Masterminds and things like that, there are younger individuals in there. What is the contact, that initial contact where you're finding people to mentor with the their benefit in mind, but also your organization? So how does it help your organization to stay current with the changing trends in legal, in lawyers, to have these mentor and mentee relationships institutionalized, but then also how is it satisfying to you personally? So then becomes the sort of initial outreach, you know, are there, you know, is it email, is it Facebook, or is it, you know, networked through in-person interactions? Are you being featured on podcasts where you're inviting people locally to join new groups that are targeting millennials or multi-generational interaction? And then what is the involvement? So is it that it's a one-on-one involvement, or is it that it's a, you know, group setting that's happening? And then who is being, you know, the, who is the accessible point for that mentee? You know, is it just the mentor, or as a mentee, are they getting access to other levels of the organizations that you're a part of? And then how do you build necessary skills that you see as potential gaps that may open up as generations cycle out of the workforce? So what are the skills that are needed that maybe law firms, you know, not law firms, but, you know, law schools, and yes, indeed, law firms, that they are not teaching as well, that need to be supplementary? And how do mentoring relationships, I mean, it could even be something as work-life balance and building good habits, how do these mentoring relationships contribute towards that skill building? And then, of course, towards the end, what is the impact, and how, again, do we set expectations and then talk about their fulfillment? And then, of course, with millennials, we have to talk about recognition and praise. This is often a generation that heard that they can do and achieve anything, and that may be the case, but it is definitely a generation that is sensitive to the amount of praise that they are getting. So within reason, how can we recognize you know, the particularly successful mentees, and then encourage those who are maybe not yet successful to, you know, keep at it and have that commitment, that wherewithal to stay put and to continue learning, and that that is a reward in and of itself. And then as we have that opportunity, how do we open up ways that through the satisfaction of these relationships, they want to, and they're encouraged to and have opportunities to pay it forward, to then recruit more of their peers for mentee-mentor relationships. And how do we tie these relationships into the strategic goals of the associations and the organizations and the firms that we're a part of. So how do we say that these actually have a quantifiable impact in growing and sustaining these organizations, in keeping them relevant and keeping them attractive to the top talent, frankly? So that's sort of the life cycle right there. And as we support these mentor-mentee relationships and they are rewarding to both members or to all members if it's a group, then hopefully we bring it full circle back to the beginning of that generation stage. So there are some reasons why we don't see women in leadership positions and why they are less excited than men to make partners. There was this McKinsey study in 2017 that came out that said, you know, there are a lot of reasons why women are not as keen to be a partner in a law firm. And some of them relate to, you know, the inability to balance family and work commitments, that there's not enough benefit and it doesn't outweigh the personal cost. The lack of interest in the pressure of leadership and the politics, those are all the top four ranking reasons. And mentorship can actually address some of that. You know, a really good mentor-mentee relationship can address the concerns around the politics because you have at least someone in your corner. It can reduce the pressure and stress by preparing you for the situations you may encounter. And like Toastmasters, it can make you more comfortable speaking in public the same way that a mentor can make you more comfortable in situations where there's leaders and not just your peers. And then if we look at, you know, the topics and how to have a constructive mentor relationship, you know, it may be solving specific or broad problems within the practice of law. It may be specific practice areas where someone is really just looking for guidance on actually their lawyering itself. How to build technology, how to be ethical and accountable, and a great lawyer. But it may also, as I mentioned, have to do with, you know, running an excellent business as a law firm. It may be being very smart financially to protect your future self from hardships that may come from financial mismanagement and lessons that you wish someone taught you. And I think that that's a great way to identify where the areas where I feel like I can contribute the most is in identifying what you wish someone had taught you or things that you've learned that you'd like to contribute back to, because that motivation you feel can be very, you know, important in sustaining your interest in being a mentor. And then also, what are some of the things that you feel you could get out of a mentor-mentee relationship? Because you don't just have to be the giver, you can also be the receiver. So what are some things you see millennials having more developed expertise in early on, and areas where you would like to build your skill set, and ask for what you want? I think that it's important to, when setting expectations, very clearly say, this is my expectation, and it's a two-way street, and this is what I expect of myself, and this is also, you know, what I expect of you. And I think, you know, one of the most important things that we can do here is to be really excellent role models. So if you find that there is an issue with commitment or, you know, managing feedback or etiquette or reputation, that we do the best that we can to be excellent role models, to speak clearly and truthfully and with respect, but also a strong backbone to peers, whether they are male or not, and to demonstrate that you can ask for what you want and have patience and build coalitions so that growth can be achieved. And the more that there's role models and the more that there's shadowing through these mentee relationships and grouping of one-on-one mentor mentees, then we are able to kind of bring everyone up. Now, I will also say that the really nice thing, and I will just conclude with this, is that the benefit of being in a state or local bar association is that face-to-face social interactions are still shown as being the most meaningful and important, and millennials are actually moving less often. So the investment that you make in investing in this talent and this relationship is worthwhile. So that, I think, is something that is very uplifting. If you look at the information on slides 18 and 19, you will see that there is an opportunity to not only have that investment pay off, but that folks will hopefully be, and this is an increasing trend that I am optimistic about, is will be sticking around. And then if we look at slide 20, you know, when we're talking about pairing considerations, these are just some of the factors that I encourage you to consider. And whether you are a peer mentor or a senior, junior, sort of traditional mentor-mentee relationship, and whether or not you have the interest in being an advisor or a guider, you know, the mentor or the sponsor. So consider these ways that you may be able to pair up and what you think is your best pairing. And that may even go down to the sort of personality Myers-Briggs type level. On slide 22, identify sort of the next step for being a mentor and finding your ideal role, whether it's individually or as an institution. And then I really would encourage you to use the Eisenhower decision matrix and think about what you're going to prioritize first, what's urgent versus important, and then to start small and test and iterate. So let yourself be the test case if you don't already have a program. If you do have a program, I encourage you to be very data-driven about it so that you can show the proof and the value of these relationships and that they do impact the institutions that you're a part of, so that you can increase the resources to these programs and pass on that torch, and that it doesn't just reside within a silo. So thank you so much for your time today. I really appreciate the opportunity to chat with you, and thank you for sharing your concerns, which hopefully I've addressed some of, but again, I would love to chat with you, and you're welcome to email me.
Thank you, Maddie. Thanks so much for keeping on track. I know it's a lot to cover. Thank you, everyone, for attending today. As Maddie said, feel free to reach out to her if you have any additional questions. And have a great rest of your day. Thank you so much, everyone. Thank you, Maddie.
Thank you. Take care.
Bye-bye.